In a threatening letter to UN members, Trump will be watching who votes against U.S. recognition of Jerusalem. That was what the U.S. ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley, wrote in a letter to other UN member countries before a UNGA vote. President Trump also warned that he would cut financial aid to those countries which vote in the UN General Assembly against the U.S. Al-Quds move. In this debate, we will look at why such statements viewed as a threat not only damage U.S. credibility, but would serve as another reason why the U.S. should be relieved from its role as a mediator.
Please raise your hand.
After being outnumbered 14-1 at the UN Security Council, the U.S. has stepped up its aggressive stance by threatening UN General Assembly members to find ways to block the upcoming vote on Jerusalem Al-Quds. The U.S. ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley, has sent warning letters to member states, threatening that the U.S. president will be closely watching the vote. Haley has been assigned to report back on those who voted against the U.S. decision.
At the UN, we're always asked to do more and give more. So when we make a decision at the will of the American people about where to locate our embassy, we don't expect those we've helped to target us. On Thursday, there will be a vote criticizing our choice. The U.S. will be taking names.
The UN General Assembly will be holding a meeting on Thursday to call for the U.S. declaration to be withdrawn. The Turkish Foreign Minister Mehmet Çavuşoğlu and his Palestinian counterpart Riyad al-Maliki will be heading to New York to vote against the U.S. decision to recognize Jerusalem al-Quds as Israel's capital. The pair has described U.S. President Donald Trump's move as unacceptable, demanding that Washington respect the status quo of the Holy City and reverse its decision.
It seems that the American administration, they are putting their stamp on a new political reality that many countries will object, and as a result, tomorrow we will see how many countries will opt to vote their consciousness, they will vote for justice, and they will vote in favor of that resolution.
Many other countries, as well as the EU, in full unity, have condemned the U.S. decision, saying it runs contrary to U.N. resolutions and shows Washington's lack of compliance. On December 6, a defiant Trump further inflamed tensions by declaring Jerusalem al-Quds as Israel's capital and ordered U.S. officials to start the construction of an embassy in the city that's equally holy to Muslims, Christians, and Jews. Many believe that Trump's controversial move and his threats could further isolate Washington and undermine its credibility and interests in the Middle East.
Our guest joining us for this edition of the debate, we have Maxine Dover, journalist and political commentator, who joins us from New York. And we also have Catherine Shukdam, director of the Shvakna Institute for Middle Eastern Studies, who joins us from London. I'd like to welcome you both. And Maxine Dover, I'll start with you, and perhaps we can do a test on diction, and if you can kindly explain to us the definition of coercion.
The definition of coercion. Good evening.
Good evening.
One who coerces another forces the second to act according to the wishes of the first.
Now, based on that definition, do you think that that is indeed what's happening on the news that we have for you, which is our topic of the debate? First, what was a 1-2 punch, I guess, if you want to call it, the U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley, with her threat coming from, her boss, and then her boss coming out and speaking, I guess, what that threat was all about. And let me just explain that in terms of what he had said. Quote, this is U.S. President Donald Trump. They take hundreds of millions of dollars and even billions of dollars, and then they vote against us. Well, we're watching those votes. Let them vote against us. We'll save a lot of money. We don't care. What is your reaction upon that statement by Donald Trump, Maxine Dover?
It is a reaction of someone who has the ability to benefit many other countries, and has decided that those benefits will be given in context of political agreement one with the other. Response would be the same in any family, for example. You know, if you are asking your brother to help you and build your houses and help you with the water system in your house, and then saying, but I'm going to spit in your face and not do anything you say and walk away from all of your directives, it's a similar situation.
Uh-huh. Let's bring in Catherine Shugdam to get a reaction. And I'm glad you used
that. There is a benefit response game here.
I'm glad you used the terminology that you used there, spit in the face, because Catherine Shugdam, many Palestinians are feeling that. That's exactly what they're feeling based on what's out on the street. Maxine Dover, I know you have a reaction after Catherine Shugdam speaks. Catherine Shugdam, go ahead.
Well, yeah, definitely. I think the Palestinians feel quite bruised, and quite rightly so. I mean, what Donald Trump did is actually rather despicable as far as they're concerned and from their perspective, because they were, you know, suddenly they wake up one morning and they see their sovereignty being disappeared. They see their right being trampled upon, and they have to say thank you very much, America, on top of it. So, yes, and the reaction that you have seen from the world is actually telling you that something is very wrong with the decision that Donald Trump took from Washington, and that Jerusalem should indeed, you know, remain, I would say, neutral when it comes to any form of, you know, diplomatic or political resolution when it comes to the Palestinian issue, because it's, of course, a very sour point. It's a very controversial issue when we speak about Jerusalem, and therefore we should be very careful about how we go about approaching it. But of course, Donald Trump doesn't understand this. He does kindergarten politics, which you saw on display today with the kind of, you know, rhetoric coming out of Nikki Haley, when she's basically acting as a mouthpiece for her boss, threatening people, you know, with all kinds of, you know, sanctions and cuts and maybe war. We're not quite sure now. You know, should they not comply? So it's very interesting, because suddenly Washington knows exactly what to do when it comes to coercing countries into doing their bidding and actually abiding by their rules. But when it comes, for example, to, you know, forcing Israel to withdraw from, occupied territories or stopping illegal settlement, then suddenly, you know, this form of coercion that Washington is quite willing to use today doesn't work so much. So it's interesting to know that, you know, when there's a will, there's a way, but it's always, you know, about context and rhetoric and agenda behind, you know, that will. So I would say that, you know, again, Donald Trump is in all his glory, threatening the world with we're not quite sure what, because, you know, he's throwing a tantrum, basically. And the Palestinians are not really paying attention to what Washington is saying. What they're doing is enacting their resistance, which is a right, a natural right, by the way. They have the right to resist oppression, because oppression exists in Israel. It is actually a state reality. And they will continue to do so.
Maxine Dover.
Yes.
Reaction, or should I ask my question?
I didn't hear your question. I'm sorry.
No problem. I'll ask my question. That's why you didn't hear it. Basically, we're looking at the form and manner, the form and manner that Trump is delivering his statements, Maxine Dover. We can take that in a light way, or we can take it into the context of what type of reaction is getting on the ground. We're looking at, I believe, over 1,000 injuries at this point. There have been a number of deaths. There have been, in retaliation, rocket fire coming from the Gaza Strip. You're looking at massive demonstrations around the world. Don't you think that there could have been a better approach by the U.S. administration, in particular what we saw on display at the U.N., and of course now with Trump's statements, to begin with his recognition of Jerusalem al-Quds? All of this could have been done in a more diplomatic way, but he has decided not to take that route. Is it because he wants to get the type of reaction that we're seeing, which is filled with violence and in many cases just alienation and hatred towards the U.S., based again on what the protests and the people in the protests are doing and saying?
Look, if I had been a political advisor to Donald Trump, I would have chosen perhaps a different way, a more subtle way. As we've discussed in previous shows, the capital of Israel among Israelis is Jerusalem, the capital of Israel that a foreign president will visit is Jerusalem, the Knesset's in Jerusalem. Did this specific statement have to be made at this delicate time in political history, I would question that. And the fact of the reaction was to be expected, unhappily to be expected. There are families who will mourn deaths and people will be maimed on both sides of this border because of this statement. And there will be blood in the streets. There is blood in the streets, and that is a terrible thing. The subtlety of the President of the United States perhaps has a bit to be grown.
Catherine Shugdam, this is a non-binding resolution, just like the one that happened on Monday. That's going to happen on Thursday. And it doesn't single out the U.S. president. Okay, it doesn't single out the president. It doesn't even single out the U.S. What good does this going to do then? I mean, okay, is it all for show? To use the words of the Palestinian foreign minister, it would give partial justice to the Palestinians who have been experiencing so much injustice.
As I was saying, you know, we're always asking of the Palestinians, you know, to be content with crumbs. And I think this needs to stop. We need to stop thinking that, number one, the international community has a say or even, you know, a way to actually throw into this, you know, this Palestinian issue. Palestinians will decide what justice looks like. You know, Palestinians will decide when reparation has been done and when enough is enough. I think it's a very important point to be made. So, you know, when we are basically asking Palestinians to be content with what is happening right now on international level, when countries, you know, are rising up and saying, you know, refusing to acknowledge what, you know, Donald Trump has said in terms of, you know, Jerusalem being the capital of Israel or not, is again, I would say, I think it's a political show. It's a lot of political standing, if you ask me, because again, it's non-binding. It doesn't mean anything on the ground. So it's very easy to be content with political, you know, statements and to try to make a big deal out of it, saying that it's going to bring some form of reparation or even change in terms of the way that the narrative is moving forward. But really on the ground, it's not going to change anything. I mean, Israel is still impeding on, you know, Palestine sovereignty. Palestinians are still being, you know, tortured and arrested illegally. They are still under occupation. And nothing has been done in terms of addressing the ideology that sustains Israel, which is Zionism. So until this is done, until a stand is actually being made at the UN or somewhere else for that matter, I don't think that Palestinians should be content with anything. You know, but the justice that they're getting themselves, which is actually expressed and enacted through resistance. And at this point in time, I don't think that their politicians or even state officials in Palestine can do anything, you know, to bring some form of, again, solace or even, you know, a modicum of justice. Because justice, again, you know, will only happen when the Palestinians have their land back, when their flag, you know, is being again hoisted on their land and that their sovereignty is being reaffirmed. Because we have to understand that this whole business of Jerusalem has been architected in such a way that, you know, Donald Trump, Washington, and of course, you know, this Zionist complex that exists in Israel and across the world is trying to completely deny, you know, the sovereignty of Palestine or even its very existence, you know, from the pages of our history. We need to remember this. So I'm sorry, but, you know, whatever the United Nations will do, whatever countries will do during the UN Assembly, I mean, it's nice, it's very cute, and it's a show of solidarity, and it goes to prove that, yeah, the world is not really in compliance with, you know, Donald Trump wishes, but it doesn't mean anything for the Palestinians.
Maxine Dover, I believe you had you were speaking when I gave the floor to Catherine. Go ahead.
Well, you know, Catherine, I am not going to disagree with many of your points. I think the time has come for the Palestinians and the Israelis to sit together, and make the realities on the ground work for both parties. The question is what the definition of when the Palestinians get their land back. What are the Palestinians defining as their land? If they're talking about from the river to the sea, it's not going to happen. That land is shared by two people, by the Israeli people, by the Palestinian people. And if there is a recognition of the right of Israel to exist, then the Palestinians and the Israelis can actually effectively sit together and make life better for all of the people involved in the region. And not only in the immediate direction between the Palestinians and the Israelis, but in the region. Jordan is suffering at this point with an implosion of refugees, not only Palestinian refugees, but Syrian refugees. How the region can be made to benefit should be of interest not to any of the outside parties first, but to the inside parties first. The outside parties obviously should be able to encourage the actions of the people on the ground. But the reality is that the people on the ground, the Israelis and the Palestinians, have to come together and recognize each other's rights and abide by those rights. But if Hamas represents the Palestinians, or Hezbollah is encouraging, and each of them says Israel has no right to exist, where's the conversation? That's when the U.S. comes in. That's when the U.N. has to at some point say, yes, there is a member state here called Israel, and there perhaps should be a member state called Palestine that needs to recognize all of the member states, including Israel, as having the right to exist.
Uh-huh.
When that reality starts to become reality, when those facts are accepted as reality, then we have room for negotiation. Then all of these words like oppression and right. refugee
Can I jump in?
The sorts of things that are negatives in anybody's lives
right.
can be eliminated.
Okay,
and
Catherine
Shagdam, like
if you can please hold on to your thoughts.
Industry and economics and development.
I'm sorry. We just have to take a listen to some of the viewer comments. Sorry, Catherine Shagdam. Let's listen to them, and we'll come back to Catherine Shagdam in London.
The U.S. has no right to dictate its terms to the world. Boycott the U.S. and its currency. The USA purposefully helps everyone so they can use it as a leverage to influence and impose their ideologies on the recipients. Well, that's something. They have threatened everyone else, so no surprise there to threaten the UN too. Feeling too big and strong is a dangerous notion. We are heading towards times whereby one country wants to dictate the rest of the world. The UN is about to die. The United States is a sovereign nation and will determine its own foreign policy, not globalists. I think that's a waste of time and money to talk to the US. Other countries should start boycotting America. Simply fascist tactics. Shame for the cradle of democracy. The UN General Assembly must go ahead with the vote against Trump's decision. That's a welcome idea because Trump's decision to recognize Al-Quds as capital city of Israel was not representing what the American people and the whole world want.
Some of the viewer comments. Catherine Shagdam, all yours. Go ahead.
Yes, no, I want to go back to the logic that, you know, your guest was actually putting forward, which in normal time would actually hold, you know, that, you know, you have to find a compromise and that both parties need to recognize each other, you know, so forth. But it doesn't hold when you talk about Palestine, because you have to understand something, and we tend to always forget it because we say that time, you know, has gone by and that we have to get over it. Well, I actually beg to differ. We don't have to get over anything because a crime was committed against the Palestinians, their land. I don't care for however many generations Israeli will sit on that land. It still remains stolen land. This land was stolen away from the Palestinians. How can you say that justice or compromise can exist when a crime that has been committed decades ago, I grant you, has not yet been recognized? So you're going to have to agree, and the Israel itself as an entity will have to admit that its creation was committed in criminality. When Israel can actually come out with a statement like this, maybe we can actually sit at the table, never mind compromising, but actually have a real discussion about what was being done to whom, because every time that we talk about the Palestinians, it's almost as if they have to apologize for existing, apologize for wanting their land back. You know, if your house was stolen, I'm sorry, but since when would you be willing to compromise with the thief? Just because, or he hold on to your pearl necklace for long enough for him to have a claim on it. It doesn't work like this in the rule of law. It doesn't work like this in international law. You know, crime has no time limit. When a crime has been committed, justice needs to be served. The problem that we have is that because the problem has been politicized and we have used sectarianism to kind of taint everything else, then we have to tiptoe around the reality of Israel and say that Palestinians have to get over it. I'm sorry, they don't have to get over it. If anything, Israelis will have to get over the fact and actually acknowledge the fact that they committed a crime against humanity of such biblical proportion that it's very uh-huh. likely that the world and
okay.
history will remember until the end days. So
very
let's
good.
Wake
Maxine
up
Dover.
And not
okay.
talk about
Let me
justice
respond.
Without real justice.
Sorry, Catherine. Go ahead, Maxine Dobrev. 30 seconds, though.
When the crime, you know, you just mentioned biblical proportions. The first mention of the elimination of the Jewish people, the Judea state, was in the time of the New Testament, the Bible, and just the time of the Romans, when the Romans were taking over land and expelled the Jews from Judea. The punishment for part of that, the loss of that war, was that the Romans renamed Judea as Palestine, referring to the Philistines. So the name Palestine was a Roman imposition to begin with.
You understand?
I'm not saying that the people in various tribes, both Judean tribes and Arab tribes, were not in the area.
Okay. I got to come in and give Catherine the last word here.
Let's recognize
Thank you, Maxine Dobrev.
I'm sorry, but you see, this is the problem, because whenever we talk about Israel, someone goes back to biblical times.
This was no crime by Israelis.
Or the Bible.
This was a return
to Israel.
I'm sorry,
but it doesn't hold in a court of law. At the end of the day, I'm not talking about Judea. I'm not talking about, you know, Jacob. I'm not talking about the 12 tribes of Israel here. I'm talking about the fact that in 1947, something terrible happened to the Palestinians, and thousands of people were murdered in their sleep. I'm actually talking about this crime. I'm not talking about the crime that happened 5,000 years ago, 10,000 years ago, that I can do nothing about. I'm talking about the real people
against
that are being massacred
Judeans,
today because someone decided that once upon a time it would be a great idea to rename a country and actually create the fascist entity and call it democratic. I'm sorry, but let's go back to reality and let's not start with the biblical right of return, because
okay.
in this case, you're going to have to redo
to
the entire map of the Middle East.
I wish we could continue the conversation. We're just fresh out of time. I'm
this
sorry.
No
I do apologize, but let me thank our guests, Maxine Dobrev, our journalist and political commentator there from New York. Thank you for your comments, Maxine Dobrev, and Catherine Shokdam. Thank you, director of the Shevardnadze Institute for Middle Eastern Studies from London. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Tapway, the entire team in the capital, Tehran, is goodbye.